Now, I'm a fan of coffee. I like it quite a bit. People started drinking coffee about 500 years ago or so. That's not very old when you compare it to tea. Tea drinking started roughly 3,000 years ago. And before that, interestingly, we started drinking chocolate drinks roughly about 5,300 years ago. It's a long time that people have been drinking very special beverages. Yet in the last 100 years, we have done something with these drinks that is almost, well, it is. It's completely inconceivable for the way that these drinks have been drunk throughout the years. You see, what we've been doing now is we often drink these drinks on our own and on the move. And we buy them in cups that are often colorfully labeled, but don't actually hold the heat in very well. And then as soon as we finish this very special aged drink, we crumple up the cup and throw it away. A special drink in a one-use cup. Once the cup has served its purpose, a holy purpose, a sacred purpose, even if it's first thing in the morning for coffee, for those of you who drink caffeinated coffee. Once it has served its holy, sacred purpose, it is discarded. The idea for me of the disposable cup is emblematic. It's like a key symbol of how we treat human beings in our world today. In our frenetic, frazzled city life, people are quickly used, I got what I needed from you, and then they are forgotten at best or discarded and sent away. Other human beings can be statistics for us, or they can simply be the person who made us that drink, and oh, we wish they would make it quicker so we could get on with our life. In our sermon series, as we come to today, I want to pay attention to this text about David. And how does he, as somebody who is chosen by God, relate to other people? How does he treat and care for others who are chosen by God? We've been paying attention to how David's stories teach us about who God is and who we are as those who are chosen by God. Now, this story that was read for us by Brad, this story comes at the end of all the stories about David. It's actually at the end of David's life. There's only one kind of closing scene after this. This story about his men comes as part of the chapter 23 that has a list of all of David's mighty men and all of their mighty deeds. And if you took any of these deeds, you could actually make a whole TV series based on just one episode per great deed that his men do. They are giants to overcome. There are Philistines to defeat. Joseph kills 800 in one go. Eleazar fights so many and for so long that his hand freezes to the sword. Shema stands alone in a lentil field. Everyone else has retreated, but he stands there and he defeats wave upon wave of enemies. These aren't merely soldiers. They are thunder wrapped in a human being. They are loyal and fierce and unstoppable. A small aside about this list of David's men and his warriors. At the end of the list, there's a whole bunch of names that are listed there, and it says where they're from. Things like Ahoite of Netopah or of Gibeah of the Benjaminites. It's a whole list of places that they're from. And most of us would feel like that's not really that remarkable. One's from Gad. I don't know where Gad is. What does it mean to be a Gadite? Well, I mean, maybe you're really versed in biblical languages and biblical stories, and you're like, Gad, well, that's one of the tribes because that's a son of Jacob. So that's going to be one of the tribes of Israel. He's an Israelite. But you come to these names at the end of it, and you realize one of them is from Ammonite. Whoa, aren't those the ones that terrorized the Israelites? Aren't they supposed to be mortal enemies? And then another one is the Ithrite, and then lastly is Uriah the Hittite. Super interesting that in David's list of mighty men, you get these list of others who are part of the mighty men, but they're not Israelites by birth. But David has kind of captured some aspect of God's great blessing that through Abraham, all nations will be blessed. And so you want to be part of my many men? You're part of this mission? Your citizenship is no longer from an Ammonite. You're from Jerusalem. You're part of the kingdom of God. And so David is already fulfilling that great promise that God gave to Abraham for all people. This list of warriors is remarkable, and it has this remarkable story about water from the well of Bethlehem that I dearly love this story. You see, David and his men are encamped near the area, but Bethlehem, his hometown itself, is under occupation. David, in camp with his men around him in one evening, longingly talks about home, thinks about home, and just kind of remembers, the well, the water there. I love the taste of it. Of course, he wants to reoccupy Bethlehem. He wants to retake that land and cast out the bad people. But he wistfully makes note that he longs for a taste of home. You can picture three of his men. Maybe they're standing slightly in the back. They look at each other and they kind of have this knowing smirk. They know David didn't mean this. They know it wasn't an order or a command. They know it, but they kind of read it as an impossible challenge, and they kind of wink at one another. So they sneak out from the group of David's men. They break through the lines of the Philistines. They grab the water, and they bring it back, and they offer it to David. And David takes the cup in his hand, and he looks at the cup, and he looks at his three men, and they're grinning foolishly. What does David do with the cup? Should he scold them? You fools! Why would you waste your life on something so silly? You know I didn't mean this. What a dumb way for you to die if you had died. What a waste it would have been. How would I have explained this to the rest of the men? Does he drink the drink? If he doesn't scold them, should he drink it? Good men, this was very brave of you. What devotion. Everyone, see all their great devotion. I will drink the drink and honor them. But no. David refuses to drink the drink, and instead he pours the water out. He knows that any of these men would give their life for him. He knows that any of these men are risking their lives every single time he asks them to take up the sword and go into battle. David knows that of the men around him, many of them will die by the sword. So he's willing to accept their blood for the kingdom. But something different is happening with this drink of water. You see, when they fight for David, they're not fighting for his kingdom, but they're fighting for God's kingdom. And this water for him, it was very special, but he refuses to drink it because he will not consume them. David refuses to consume his own men, pours out the water, pours it out to the Lord because he will not take personal pleasure or personal gain from the sacrifice of his men. Oh, how I wish David had learned this lesson. Because, of course, he will consume Uriah the Hittite in order to take his wife. And oh, how I wish that Christian leaders throughout history had learned this lesson. Oh, how I wish Christian brothers and sisters knew what it meant to consume one another. As Paul says in one of his letters, the whole law is summed up by a single commandment: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. If, however, you bite and devour one another, take care that you are not consumed by one another. Because we do. We do consume one another. Think of an example of a director directing a movie. And a director can be so forceful. And oftentimes we see that picture, well, genius has to be forceful. And the director can say, you know, actors, you have to bring my vision into reality. Stop being creative here and just do it the way I'm telling you to, because my genius needs to be revealed. A way of consuming the other person's talent in order for your vision to be made real. Not for the greater work of the art done together, but for your own. And all of us can find ways of consuming others around us instead of caring for them. Last week, I talked about how friendship can be transactional and rather than a true bond. When friendship is transactional, you're really just consuming the other person, aren't you? Or perhaps networking has replaced neighborliness. Or you can express compassion in order to look good. You're actually consuming the other person. Or in sports, we can consume the performers until they get so injured they can no longer continue. And we think about the damages to heads, to minds, from being hit in the head too many times. For my pleasure, this person has given their life. And in churches, we see people as stats for the annual report. as volunteers to fill holes, or as funders to make the vision a reality, rather than souls to be loved. And we see people in service industries as lesser people who don't deserve our full attention. They're not really that successful. So what does this story about David give us? What does it tell us about David as God's chosen and about ourselves? Well, for one, as I've talked about, it means that we refuse to consume one another. And secondly, it tells that life lived for God is more than just doing stuff. It's more than merely duty. When we've been talking about the chosen, what does it mean to be chosen by God over these last few weeks, perhaps you've been thinking in your mind, and I don't imagine you have been because I've been trying very hard not to say this, but perhaps you've been thinking, well, if I'm chosen by God, it's like being drafted into the service. I've been drafted into the service for God, and I have a list of things that I'm supposed to be doing, and I need to go out and do those so that I don't feel guilty like I'm wasting what I've been called to do. But I think this text tells us something more. Being called, being chosen by God, is an invitation into the great story. And the great story of God and God's people has beauty, doesn't it? Has tragedy and comedy. It has poignant moments, poetry, and so much more. It's an invitation to us to not merely perform acts of service, getting everything just right in our church, making sure everything is perfect. That's not the point. We're meant to be swept up into something that is alive, a story that is full of danger and wonder and costly love. But it can still live with a weight on us, where we can feel, okay, fabulous story. I need to make sure in my life that I don't consume others. So I think it's important to recognize that there is also incredible good news when we pay attention to the full story. Because the gospel of Jesus, the good news of Jesus, gives us an even greater picture of this kind of passionate, fully alive, costly devotion. You see, Jesus never entered into any battle. He wasn't a war hero with tales of valor, and he didn't personify any kind of warrior culture, but his adventures with his disciples had passion and intensity and revealed to us a new kingdom and a new way to fight. You see, on the night that he was betrayed, he did not find some way to drink their devotion to him, and he made sure not to consume his followers. And instead, he takes up the cup, and he says, "This is my blood, which has been poured out for you and for many." This is the Savior and the Messiah, and he is the coming King who pours himself out for them and for all of us. And when we practice the table of communion, we eat and drink not consumption. We aren't consuming Jesus, but we are in communion. In our daily lives, in all of our tasks and chores, it's easy to see other people, and especially strangers, as people who can either give us something to help us in our tasks, or as people who are just in the way. Perhaps you've been frustrated by traffic in the valley in these days. Oh, I wish there was less people here. It's so easy to treat other human beings as commodities instead of consuming one another. However, we are called to communion, the communion of the chosen. And I wonder if, in light of Jesus and in light of his table and what he calls us to, where God invites us to participate in the action of the great story, can you be fully present to that this week? I can imagine that Jesus is going to call you into the story in some way in this week. May you be fully present to it and aware of the other people in that story with you, to see every person, not as something to be used, but as someone who is chosen by God, someone whose life is sacred and whose part of the story matters. When we begin to live like that in light of communion with God, when we begin to live like that, something changes. The way we speak changes. The way we listen changes. The way we give and the way we forgive. We no longer take, we start to love. Because the God who made us has written us into his great story. And the story of David's men, of the cup that was poured out, all the way to the cross, and beyond to our tables, the tables that we have drink at. It is a story not where love is a transaction, but where love is transformation. I can imagine just the simple act of going to a fast food restaurant is different for those of us who take this story to heart, where you can see the person across the counter not as somebody who hasn't made it very far in life, but as somebody who is sacred and chosen by God. So what can you do differently in that moment? Well, perhaps it's just as simple as, can I pray for this person across the counter from me? Just simply in your mind, pray for this person. And be open to the fact that God may in fact use you as an answer to that prayer, maybe in the moment, but maybe later too. A simple act of praying God's blessing on another human being sees them not merely as someone who is there to do things for you, but as somebody who is sacred and chosen by God. My encouragement, my plea, my desire for you is to go and to live this story. Love people as those who are chosen by God. Refuse to consume one another. And instead offer the same generous, self-giving love that Christ has offered you. Because that's how heaven's great story keeps unfolding, keeps being told. It's one life at a time. It's one act of grace at a time. It's one cup poured out at a time. And in so doing, as you see this at work in the world around you, as you participate in this life that Jesus has called you to, you're going to find yourself free, free from that desire to consume others, free from the desire to grasp, to hold on to, and free to follow Jesus where he leads you and into the life that he leads you into. Thanks be to God.